Welcome to another episode of Historical.
Welcome.
Yes, with myself, the ever positive and pragmatic Matthew Nelson, and my co-host, the redoubtable, I love that word, Wayne Bridgman.
That is one of the better human words, redoubtable. Hello, dear listeners. We hope you enjoyed episode one. Upon listening to it again, of course, this is episode two. If you haven't listened to episode one, you may want to go back.
Well, for those that enjoy listening to episodes in a sort of frequency, positive way.
Serial mode.
Yes, serial. One, two, three. If you enjoy that, which most humans do, then that's great.
So please do. And actually, upon listening to that again, I think you can hear we were sort of both still in recovery mode with our due to those sort of human germ things that we had, cold.
Yes.
Curse these fragile human soft casings, you humanoids call bodies.
Yes, actually, I preferred the casings, Wayne, we used when we...
us humanoids.
Cards. Yes.
Us humanoids.
Us humanoids used when we broadcast from planet Zargon the Third. Though the slimy green skin was annoying, the 16 tentacles worked a treat for multitasking.
We're not... broadcasting on interstellar radio here. It's the Earth podcast.
Oh, yes. Very true,
best
yes.
to keep that under wraps.
Yes. So,
tentacle thing.
Every cloud and all that. Anyhow.
Ooh, that was close.
In the last episode, we set the scene around the Ptolemy dynasty and some of the geopolitics in the region and with the ever-expanding...
Yeah, like my belly sack. Waistline.
Waistline
is what we call it. Yeah.
With the ever-expanding Roman Republic. In regards to the formation of the Ptolemies from the dynasty from Alexander the Great's empire. Actually, if we were to think of the Ptolemies and they produce a musical album, the first song they released from that musical album would actually be We Are Family from Old Sister Sledge.
I see what you're saying.
Because they loved incest.
They
These guys loved
keep it. Keep it in the family.
Yep, such was their devotion to keeping the bloodline pure as the driven snow.
Yes, I mean, family inheritance in those days was something that you didn't get taxed on. You know what I mean? Oh, the other song that you could use was maybe Daddy's Girl by Scorpions.
Yeah, of course,
you know, that's a great track, listeners. If you haven't listened to that, go and have a Google. And Cleopatra, let's get back to Cleopatra here, of course. She had had already a successful first rule of Egypt for a number of years until one of those military coup things like Erdogan did, the fake one that he did.
Oh, allegedly.
A military coup forced her from power. And she had to sort of exile herself into Syria with her sister Arisomni, and therefore her brother, Ptolemy the 13th, we won't go into the history of that again, has taken the throne. And of course the mighty Roman Republic and Julius Caesar are still locked in civil war. And
as Axl Rose said, what's so civil about war anyhow?
Well...
He
was
actually misunderstood the meaning.
He missed
of course,
his missed
what
his calling, didn't he?
Civil War men.
He missed his calling. He should have been a poet or something. Axl Rose, I thought. They've just beaten off Pompey at the Battle of Pharsalus and sent the latter into full flight mode, heading back to Egypt, a place where Rome's previous greatest general, Pompey in brackets, has in the past been welcomed very fondly. So he thinks, I've got friends there. I can get there, consolidate, and see what's going on.
Probably earn a few favours or, you know.
A few favours owed.
Yeah.
Both Caesar and Pompey, at this time, are engaged in a very, very, very,
very
low speedboat chase to the port of Alexandria. Watch out, they're catching us.
When's he going to catch you up?
Possibly a month or so. So.
Now... news made its way in advance, though, of Pompey's arrival to Cleopatra's brother, as we said, Ptolemy the 13th. He had got wind, actually.
Unlucky for some.
Not flatulence. It's not flatulence. Oh, right. He just got wind, as in he'd heard, so to speak, that Pompey was on his way to Alexandria.
Not enough fruit.
And he called here, well, of course, he probably had a high rich diet of...
meat, if he was a pharaoh.
Meat and... Jaguar's earlobes and things like that. Mm. His advisor, he basically called his advisors into a meeting as to what should be done and how should Egypt handle this situation diplomatically in the best way possible.
Tricky.
Now, Egypt, as we know, always liked to keep Rome happy and saw its freedom and prosperity closely linked with keeping that bully, that alpha male, that is the Roman Republic, happy and with no reason for them to need to march into Alexandria. But what to do when two Roman factions are fighting each other?
Who to support?
Principally, Ptolemy needed to keep Rome on the side of Egypt, but who had the power in Rome? That's the question. And who was likely to have it when the war was over?
Who did have the power in Rome? Well, time to place your bets. Let's find out.
And to use that analogy, he had to, a Texas Hold'em analogy, he had to go all in with limited information. Certainly not Pompey the Great, though. He's not going to go all in Pompey the Great. His star that had shone so incredibly bright for so very long, but now it was certainly on the wane. And he had just had a major can of whoop-ass handed to him by Julius Caesar.
And it was time, of course, for Pompey the Great to have his name changed by Interpol to Pompey the sort of...
Pretty average.
Now Pompey. On his knees, really. It doesn't roll off the tongue quite so well. But so the Republic and the influential Senate led by Cato and Cicero and Brutus, of course, who were still fighting against Caesar in the Civil War, looked like they were going to get beaten shortly. They're on the ropes, basically. So they decided in their wisdom that the best thing for Egypt was to go all in, Texas Hold'em style, as Matt said, with Julius Caesar and his army of extremely tough veterans.
Now, the veterans, the legion he took there was the 10th, the mighty 10th.
Yeah,
never been beaten.
Don't mess with the 10th. After all, the man had never lost a battle, for goodness sake. And he'd been in the field all this time.
Well, for years, for decades.
Yeah. He had a list of conquests, the likes of which had never been seen before in Rome.
Yes, and not just in the bedroom department as well, where he had pretty significant conquests as well,
yes,
in that department.
Yes, right. Many a sword notch on the bedpost there. So Ptolemy and his advisors were thinking, yeah, keep him happy and all would be well in Egypt. We will continue to prosper. So who to support was decided. Ptolemy and his advisors tried to think how best they could do that and align themselves to Caesar.
Yes, therein lies the rub, as they say.
Without annoying the rest of Rome, I should point out.
Yeah. Should they play it cautious, or did they, as we say, go all in with Caesar? The answer would not be long in its coming.
Much like Caesar, when he first met Cleopatra.
When Pompey's ship sailed into Alexandria's harbour and laid anchor, for Pompey and his wife looked ashore and they could see the pharaoh was, as expected, there with an honour guard of his finest men and Roman soldiers.
Okay,
yes, he'd come to the beach, he'd set himself up in his royal apparel on the beach, you know, ceremonial fashion to greet him.
Yeah.
So Pompey bade farewell to his wife and with a few men took a small rowboat to shore to meet Ptolemy, the servant of the mighty Roman Republic.
Yes.
Remember, guys and girls and aliens from the planet Zargon the Third, remember these Romans looked down on the Ptolemies. They didn't respect them.
They looked down on most people, didn't they? So Pompey, he wades ashore. Finally, he's reached land. Pompey tried to start a conversation with one of the Romans in the boat and said he recognised the man and had he served with him in the pirate wars, perhaps? The man did not look at Pompey and said he did not.
Which is a bit odd, because he is Pompey the Great, and you would have shown him a bit of respect if you were just a legionary.
Got to be careful with these people. So Pompey sort of reread his speech he was to give to
Ptolemy, and he's written it in Greek.
Yeah.
So he's a clever guy, Pompey.
Yeah, so I think these higher up in the Roman society probably got some homeschooling, didn't they? So, when the boat touched the shore, Pompey jumped into the surf and walked towards the seated Ptolemy, whose face remained frozen without expression. You'd think maybe the eyes, their mouth would go into a smile, you know, the human features would peel back in an expression of welcome and joy that he's going to meet them.
Or maybe the eyes just glitter with, oh, hello. Yeah.
Maybe a little cheeky wink. Anything, but no, expressionless. And as he walked, Pompey pulled out the speech that he'd prepared.
Now, as he started to greet the pharaoh, a A Roman soldier who was stationed in Egypt and in the pay of the Ptolemies suddenly drew his sword and viciously stabbed Pompey in the back.
What the?
Pompey tried to fight back, but was repeatedly stabbed by other soldiers until he slumped to the ground.
And
dying.
I'm guessing he had to give up on his speech at this point.
Yeah. Total amateur.
Amateur.
Yeah. His wife witnessed from afar and screamed. Wayne, give me the scream.
Pompey!
Correct. As she saw her beloved husband butchered on the beach.
It's a good name for a metal band.
Yeah, it is actually.
Butchered on the beach.
I like that. To conclude this macabre end to one of Rome's most famous and greatest men, Pompey the Great then had his head cut off and taken to the seated pharaoh.
Oh, don't mess around, do they? So the Alexandrians and Ptolemy 13th, remember, clearly believed that they'd done a great job here.
Yeah,
right. This is a brilliant piece of work. They'd certainly now fully committed to Caesar and his success. This whole thing was to demonstrate that to Caesar. What better way, in fact, to win favour with Caesar than to cut the head off his deadliest rival? Well, great idea, isn't it?
It's brilliant, yeah. You know, as long as you understand Caesar.
Yeah. Well, these guys certainly think they do. You know, like an act like this would win, they thought, not only Caesar's heart, but also his everlasting gratitude. And everyone knew how generous Caesar was to his friends, of course. So let's go back now and become a fly, or possibly a scarab beetle, on the wall, or maybe on a camel's hump.
Yeah.
Is that because it's out by the beach?
Or butt.
Yeah. As that Ptolemaic group walked back from the beach, pleased, pretty pleased, with their day's work. Well, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? Well done, Axius. We have secured the future of my Ptolemy the 13th's rule.
Yes, I believe we have. I can only imagine when Caesar arrives and hears what we have done, we will see quite a reaction.
Yes, Axius. Yes, you're right, Axius. He will reward us. And my dear, scheming, evil older sister will be on my list of things to ask for. A head for a head. I think that's only fair.
Yes, Axius. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Now, where shall I mount it? That's the question.
You're using your head, Ptolemy the 13th, unlike Pompey, who just lost his.
that's actually very good. That's very good, actually. Normally, you're not a funny man, but that's very good. Now, we don't want word of this leaking out and spoiling the surprise for Caesar. I'm really looking forward to seeing his face. We must make an impact when Caesar arrives, okay? Make sure no one breathes a word, all you soldiers here. I want to see Caesar's face the moment when he finds out. He's going to be overjoyed. Can't wait for this.
Yes, my most wise master. Perhaps we could offer him a gift of Pompey's head upon his arrival.
Ah, yes, I see. Like a keepsake, Axius. Yes, you're full of good ideas. You're a genius, man. And this was all your idea. There'll be rewards for you, Axius, for this as well.
I hope so.
Well, and of course, Rome's generosity, I hear, is most kind to those that serve it well. They're going to shower us. And we have served them well today. I can't wait.
Well, thank you, my master.
We're so clever.
Of all I survey, shall I pickle the head until Caesar arrives? I mean, we don't want it going off, cause a stink and all, and be mouldy when he sees it.
Yes, yes. Pickle away. But not in my favourite pickled onion bowl. Don't want to get them mixed up. Which reminds me, I'm hungry, and not only for Caesar's favour.
So, with Ptolemy and his cohort pleased with their handiwork, we now turn our gaze to Julius Caesar, as he is headed in pursuit of Pompey, and also as he's heading to Egypt and Alexandria, he has a thought, as the ever pragmatic Caesar does. What he thought was, he needed to sort out an internal issue that had been brought to his attention. Now, we mentioned this in episode 1. Egypt provided grains and resources to Rome. A civil war was being waged in Egypt between the Ptolemy families. If he could settle this war, as well as capture Pompey, then Rome indeed would be pleased with him. A few weeks later, he lands with a legion in Alexandria.
That's about 5,000 men, a legion.
Yep. But the thing that persisted in Caesar's mind was, what should he do with his old friend, Pompey? If it had not been, after all, for Cato and the Senate, he and Pompey would still be comrades in arms. He had more in common with Pompey than he did with most others. They'd both been legendary generals. They both were army men at heart. Pompey should be shown leniency.
Yeah, what should he do with his old, very good friend that he gets on with very well, despite all their disagreements, Pompey? Difficult, isn't it? And as Caesar arrives in his ship convoy, he lays anchor. He starts to disembark his galley and sort of wades ashore to be met by this sort of Ptolemaic entourage who take him through the busy port and bustling marketplaces to a sort of a seated area overlooking the port where Ptolemy the 13th waits for them. Caesar was curious as he approached them and noticed that Ptolemy and his chief eunuch are sort of nodding and winking at each other, not like that, as if they're sort of very pleased with themselves, or perhaps even sharing a private joke.
Yeah, Caesar could see the eunuch making the money sign with his hands and rubbing his thumb and his forefinger together and smiling like a Cheshire cat. Ptolemy was simply grinning and rubbing his hands together, seemingly sharing a joke as Caesar approached.
Oh, okay.
I mean, what was all this about?
Oh, interesting. Let's see, shall we?
Let's go back and see how the scene unfolded.
I can't wait for him to see this. I've already chosen what I'm going to spend the bit of bunce, what I'm going to spend the reward on that Caesar's going to give us. And, you know, it's going to be like a huge statue of me. In the centre of the city, I'm going to be holding my sister's head in one hand and, well, something else in the other. Oh, a sword in the other, yes.
Great. Are you going to knock the lighthouse of Alexandria down and rebuild it in a gold? Because you can.
Oh, don't, Axis. You're incorrigible. I'd probably have enough money to build two next to each other. Yeah. All right, come on, settle down. Settle down, Axis. Okay, it's showtime. Now, wish me luck, okay? I'm going to put my serious face on. Here he comes. Right, okay, straight face. Hail, mighty Caesar! I'm your humble servant, King Ptolemy the 13th.
Ave, Ptolemy! Mighty Caesar is pleased to visit the loyal Ptolemies. But Caesar comes here on business and in pursuit of General Pompey Magnus, known as Pompey the Great. Has he come this way? If so, Mighty Caesar commands, tell me now.
Well, Mighty Caesar, we may indeed help you in this quest. Show him the box. In fact, we may have given you a head start in your search. Stop laughing, you'll ruin the surprise. But first, I offer you this gift, Mighty Caesar. You're going to love this. From Alexandria. And indeed, I had a hand in choosing this wonderful personalised gift. Just for you.
Caesar thanks you, King Ptolemy. Ooh. Caesar is most touched. And this is most generous. And perhaps as I open this box now, this will signify the opening of a new relationship with Egypt as we begin forging new ties with Rome. My God! It's Pompey!
Yes.
They cut his head off! Poor Pompey! Oh. My dear friend! Oh. You should not have ended like this! Pompey!
Are they tears of happiness?
You animals! You barbaric animals! The great man of Rome cut by Scam, the Scum of Alexandria.
Oh.
I will avenge you, my dear friend. I will avenge you, Big Pompey.
Axius! This was all your idea. This has gone really, really quite wrong.
Master, I thought this was a joint effort. You said it was a joint effort.
Silence! This one's on you, you shit. I thought you understood these Romans.
Oh, bugger.
So, in true Julius Caesar style, the man had every desire to find Pompey and forgive him, as he had most of his advisories, actually, during the Civil War. He wanted to actually to bring him into his inner circle once more, as he had been for the past decade before the Civil War.
So they'd had good 15 years of companionship.
That's
really,
right, they were
political
companions.
Allies.
Yeah. In fact, Caesar was known to forgive, which meant he received many defections to his side from Pompey's during the war.
This shocked and hurt Caesar to his very core.
It would, yeah.
A great Roman butchered by lesser mortals. The shame and outrage of it all was too much for him. But, in his true professionalism and pragmaticism...
Well, as we saw in the clip, I mean, he hardly blinked, did he? Hardly batted an eyelid when he saw the head.
Well,
very professional.
And maybe he regained his professionalism.
Oh, right.
And pragmatism very soon after made him the man he was. And he went and demanded that he and his men be set up in the royal palace so he could now prepare for the second reason upon his arrival to Alexandria to resolve as quickly as he could, so he could get out of this place, the civil war between the two Ptolemies. Ptolemy the 13th and his sister Cleopatra.
So Caesar, he marches his legion, very dramatic, into Alexandria and takes up residence in the royal palace, as you would.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to control his anger over Pompey, he asks about the affairs of Egypt and starts to look into how he can sort of resume those grain shipments back to Rome. Very important, of course. Within a few days, he asks that both Ptolemy and Cleopatra are to meet him in person so he can resolve the issues, in inverted commas.
Yes, he wants issues, not tissues.
That's right. This is no issue for Ptolemy.
Yeah. Not sure what that meant, but...
There's no issue for Ptolemy. He's located in Alexandria, of course, but Cleopatra, if you remember, dare not show her face anywhere near the city. She's in Syria. For fear of her face being lopped off. You saw what these Egyptians like to do to heads and faces. But if she does not attend, then how can she argue her case to the Roman general that she would, and you know, she would stand no chance of Rome supporting her bid to regain control of Egypt otherwise, right? Like a fat kid locked out of a sweet/candy store, whatever it takes, you must find a way in.
One evening, shortly after sending summons to Cleopatra, a messenger of Cleopatra's arrives within the palace and makes his way to Caesar's apartment. This large Egyptian man is escorted into the room where Caesar and his generals are discussing the matters at hand, going through the fine print, going through the finances, where next for the civil war, all that kind of stuff. As he's escorted into the room, Caesar notices he holds in his huge arms a rather plush, rolled-up Persian carpet.
Oh, a bit weird, isn't it? Okay.
The man announces that he is a servant of Cleopatra, the ruler in exile of Egypt, and that this gift is from her to the mighty Jabba the Hutt, Julius Caesar.
Oh, so it's not much of a gift, though, is it, a carpet?
With that, Caesar's bodyguard, Amr Akbar, shouts, "It's a trap!" and runs his sword into the carpet. Blood pours from the holes, and the shocked guard drops the carpet to the floor, unrolls, exposing a dead Cleopatra, a gaping wound in her neck.
Hang on. No, I don't know what you've been reading here, but that didn't happen.
That's,
of course, listeners. Caesar actually dutifully accepts this gift. Although it looks like it's a, bit poor as gifts go, just a carpet, basically. So he accepts the gift. And,
in those times, a bit of carpet was what you wanted.
Well, that's right. Caesar certainly loved a bit of carpet, didn't
he? No underfloor heating.
Yeah, that's right.
Cold on your feet. Always wearing sandals.
Anyway, he accepts the gift, and the servant steps forward and unravels the carpet. And surprise, surprise, Cleopatra's hidden inside. She's very cleverly snuck into the most guarded place in Alexandria and into the very room of the man she knows she must meet. Of course, she knew every secret door there and, you know, every nanny and...
Granny, it should be Granny.
So, well, she knew all the old people there as well.
She probably did know every Granny.
She was a risk taker, this woman. Something she shared in common with this most famous of the Roman generals. Now, Caesar likes an impressive entrance.
Well, actually, he loves the whole woman, not just the entrance.
Well, that's true, yes. He has a reputation as a sort of a first-class playboy, as sort of a Hugh Hefner, if you will.
As Plutarch said of Caesar, animal, mineral, vegetable. If it's got a hole, he'll do it.
That Plutarch certainly had a way with words, didn't he? Although Caesar was, by all accounts, completely taken by surprise and admired instantly the cunning and beauty of the queen. Just to get an age check, actually, at this stage, and Cleopatra was probably about 21 or 22 at this time.
Now, Julius Caesar, who is in his 50s, immediately recognised the potential of them being lovers and allies.
No shit.
Yes, of course. He did the dirty old goat. The sexual tension was immediate and very evident between the two of them, and Caesar told his generals that they could conclude the conversation they were having prior to Cleopatra's arrival tomorrow. So he ushered them out the room. Get out of here. What, really? Yeah, fuck off.
Got the boys out of the barracks.
So he could get his boys out of the barracks. Cleopatra did the same with her manservant, which left the two of them alone to talk in his chambers.
Yeah.
You could fry an egg on Caesar's breastplate with the sexual tension in the room.
Well, again, let's go back and be a scarab beetle on the wall and see how things would have transpired in that room.
Well. What do we have here, then? That's quite a rug you've got there.
Oh, my gown slipped. You know, it's hard to get a good waxer in Syria these days.
I meant the carpet. It looks impressive. Oh. Is it an original Persian?
Oh, it is. Oh, my. You're looking at me as if you want to eat me. Or is it the carpet you like?
It's you, young queen. You vex me. You vex me very much.
Oh.
I'm fully erect. I mean, I'm fully vexed as I stand here before you. So, Cleopatra, how come you upon me this night?
Yes, I have exposed myself in secret to you. If I had not, my brother would have had me hanging on a long, thick shaft if I'd come in the front passage.
Very wise. Well, welcome, Queen Cleopatra. I have my cock in my hand. What? I mean, I have Egypt in my hand. I meant Egypt, sorry. You vex me, as I say,
but
Cleopatra.
I should welcome you, worry not, Caesar. Welcome to my city of Alexandria. I've waited for your arrival. I've wanted to tackle you for some time.
Really? I did not realise my reputation had penetrated so much.
Indeed, the moment your fleet docked in port, I knew you'd be in the mouths and on the lips of every Alexandrian for miles around.
This is true.
All I hear is Caesar this and Caesar that.
And I'm sure you find that hard to swallow.
Not really.
What with you being the queen of this country and normally the one they speak about? Do you mind being upstage Queen Cleopatra?
Well, tell me, what does mighty Caesar enter Alexandria and think of forced entry?
You what? I bloody well wasn't. I just think you're very nice. You're a lovely lady, a lovely queen. To be honest, I thought we had a connection. Honestly, that wasn't on my mind at all.
Well, how else would you describe huge columns of Roman legionaries entering the fertile port of Alexandria with a desire to loot and pillage whatever you like?
Oh, I see, yes. that kind of forced entry.
Are we the slaves of Rome in your eyes already?
I am here, Queen, to fix the civil war between you and your annoying brother. Or is that that child your husband?
No.
You Ptolemies have such old-fashioned ways. I need to get tits.
What?
I mean abreast of the issues, and I will not withdraw until Alexandria is satisfied with my efforts, and it may take pounding and pushing for that to happen. Rome will inspect the product of my entry, and I must not come back with an empty sack.
What?
Or sacks of grain.
Oh.
Of grain. Come what may, I must discharge.
Well, mighty Caesar, you have conquered the Gauls and the Roman Republic now. Surely you're the new Alexander.
Yes, it has been said.
The King of Kings?
Yes.
Can Cleopatra be your next prize?
Come here. I need to claim that booty.
Well, the relationship could have been love or lust or possibly both. But there was more to it and both knew it. A powerful political agenda behind the Union. They're both leaders of influential and powerful nations. They have people of power and wealth under them. The armies could fight big-scale battles. Both Rome and Egypt needed intellectual leaders. That could work in partnership. Perfect.
Specifically for Cleopatra's side, she saw how Caesar's fleet could easily return her to power. For Caesar, he could be a hero of Rome by fixing Egypt, but also he could gain a powerful ally in his pocket outside of Rome should he ever fall foul of the Senate. That could prove very useful for him. For also, Caesar had planned to invade Parthia. Egypt would be a great place to launch an attack on Parthia from.
Oh, those Parthians.
Those Parthians.
Caesar started to mediate between Cleopatra and her husband. Ptolemy was outraged. Outraged! When the next day he was called to the palace to find Cleopatra there, lounging, possibly in a chaise longue,
yeah,
next to Caesar. How she done it? How she pulled him off? Pulled it off?
Well,
He had a bad few weeks first, getting it wrong with the killing of Pompey.
Mm-hmm.
And now Cleopatra seemingly close to Caesar, very close. He felt his grip on his power lessening.
Ptolemy began to sense the closeness to the relationship between Caesar and Cleopatra. Now, when Julius Caesar named Cleopatra co-ruler of Egypt with himself, Ptolemy realised that if he did nothing, he would be replaced as ruler in time.
At least he got that right.
Yeah. Even if Julius Caesar left Egypt and returned home, he would still have his protection, Cleopatra would have his protection, which meant he could not claim the throne even then. So he retreated from Alexandria and summoned his loyal generals and declared war on Cleopatra.
Ooh.
And Julius Caesar.
Oh dear.
Now, realising that Julius Caesar had only a token, small force of Romans at his disposal, he really fancied his chances.
Don't mess with the tenth.
Thus began the Alexandrian War and the eventual siege of Alexandria, which was to go on for some months and could almost spell the end for Julius Caesar and Cleopatra.
Well, in the Ptolemy corner of this war was generals Achilles and Pothinus, and they marched against Alexandria with about 20,000 foot infantry and around sort of 2,000 cavalry. They also had chariots. Caesar was in Alexandria. He did not really have sufficient forces to oppose them in open ground because he estimated it around sort of 4,000 legionaries or so. And that was his only option. To sort of stay firm.
Defence option.
Defend.
Yeah.
So, realising he was in a little bit of trouble here, he sent ambassadors to negotiate for him and Cleopatra. However, General Achilles murdered the ambassadors, a bit of a barbarian, this guy, to remove all hopes of reconciliation between Caesar and Cleopatra. They weren't messing around, these guys. The Ptolemaic forces then marched into Alexandria and occupied most of the city. As the Romans gave up territory to defend a smaller and smaller area that matched the size for their legion that they could cope with, Meanwhile, Arsinoe, that's Arsinoe, the younger sister of Cleopatra, sensing defeat, had defected to Ptolemy's side from Cleopatra's, and sensing the impending doom to her older sister,
it's all doom.
She escaped from Caesar and defected formally and joined Achilles.
Now, in 47 BC, the siege of Alexandrian Palace was in place. But dissension broke out between the Ptolemy forces as they had yet to inflict this decisive knockout blow, and they were getting frustrated. Actually, they probably knew time was on Caesar's side as opposed to theirs. Worse still, Ptolemy had managed to get himself captured.
Ugh.
And Julius Caesar and Cleo had actually had him as hostage. This left Arsinoe in charge. She probably had Achilles put to death by Ganymedes, her eunuch, basically, to whom she had entrusted the command of the forces, which in hindsight was probably a mistake.
Yeah, well, he didn't have balls, did he? For the
Ganymedes initially enjoyed some success against Caesar, but the leading Egyptian officers were soon dissatisfied with the unit's lack of tactics.
And balls.
Now, under a pretext of wanting peace, they negotiated with Caesar to exchange Arsinoe for Ptolemy, who was subsequently released, but only to continue the war.
But of course, Caesar, you know, this is no rookie we're talking about here. He's always one step ahead.
The veteran of Gaul.
He'd already sent a blooming request for relief, for goodness sake.
Not an uncommon request from Caesar, actually.
Cleopatra often helped him. So, relief for the Romans came from Mithridates, of course, of Pergamum, and Antipater from Judea. A final pitched battle, finally, was fought as the Romans sprang, Matt, out of the palace to hit the Alexandrians head-on as they were taken from behind.
Not for the first time by Caesar.
By Mithridates and his allies on the west side of the Nile River, this is. Caesar, can you predict the outcome of this? Mithridates, one side, Caesar on the other? Of course, Caesar was victorious. Ptolemy the 13th, as we said, unlucky for some, died during the battle, it was believed. They think he drowned while escaping, actually. That'll teach him not to wear floating armour. So that was the end of the short war, and most importantly, it left Cleopatra ruling Egypt, but of course husbandless and in need of a new Ptolemy to marry.
I wonder which number that'll be. During the time that followed, Cleopatra gave birth to a son. A son is believed to be the product of the union between Caesar and herself. Caesar accepted that this child was his, and Cleopatra, always motivated by the political nature of herself and Caesar's relationship, called the boy Caesarion.
Caesarion, where the medical procedure comes from, of course.
Possibly it is. I don't know if that's the case, but it may be. Look it up. But in translation, it meant little son of Caesar. Already she is tying her family into Rome's leadership. Clever girl.
Then Cleopatra, under Caesar's instructions, married her younger brother, here we go again, Ptolemy the 14th, you could predict, to return her rule over Egypt as a fully-fledged pharaohess.
Whoopah!
However, she was also lover to Julius Caesar, and this was an open secret. Cleopatra and Julius Caesar spent time in Alexandria and took a cheeky little cruise down the Nile, and generally, JC took about 6 months off to relax, in inverted commas. He definitely deserved a break after about, 14 years in the field or so?
He's certainly earned it, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So we leave episode 2 here, with Cleopatra and Caesar relaxing on a barge heading down the Nile. Join us next time when Caesar will again take to the field to fight his countrymen.
He loves a fight.
Cleopatra will make her grand entrance into Rome.
Ooh.
And some senators will plot to save the Roman Republic.
Hooray.
All this and more in episode 3 of Cleopatra.
Bye for now, listeners.